Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, morning, morning. Sunday morning is 10 o'clock, and it's time now for another edition of Support the Brothers. I'm your host, Dal Alameen. We also have Mr. Wilson in the house as far as Kahan, but Kahan is not here today, and we're gonna work this out without him because we got two legs today, one leg short, but we still gonna keep running. Before I go into it, I want to explain. Somebody asked me the other day, they said, why is the show called Support the Brothers? And I'm really thinking about changing the show to Support the Conscious. And here's the reason why. When we first started the show, it was basically some brothers sitting around talking. I had the idea because I used to cook sometime and the brothers would come by the house. Or then we would sit around and talk. When they got the center open, people would come by the center and I would sell stuff. People would sit outside and talk. And I also remember there was a movie called Do the Right Thing. When the movie came, Do the Right Thing out, there was three brothers that always sat and talked about the community. And it was from three different perspectives. I always loved those scenes in the movie because each brother came with a different perspective, but each perspective was valid. And that's what a lot of times I think we miss in our conversation, especially in our barber shop conversation. We get in a conversation on sports or politics. Everybody has a valid. If they can come with facts and proof, then that makes their conversation valid. And so I always wanted to do a show like that. So I said, well, let's call it Support the Brothers. It wasn't a diss to the sisters. The reason why we call Support the Brothers, because when I say brothers, this is me personally, and naming the show, I can explain why. When I say brothers, I ain't talking about every black man in America. I'm going to make that say that again. When I say brothers, it's supporting the brothers, I'm not talking about black men. And I think that's where some of the sisters came up like, well, this is a show for men only. No, it's called Support the Brothers, but it should be Support the Conscious now because sisters want to join in, and I want them to feel free to be able to join into the conversation. But the reason why I say Support the Brothers and don't see every black man in America as brothers, because some of us still are behaving as that word we don't like, the N word, and I just say it on air, niggas. Sometimes we still have that element in our community that want to portray themselves as brothers, but act other than brothers. When I say brothers, I'm talking about brothers who put they soul on the line, they put their work on the line, they've been doing this for years. You can't come in here like been doing this for 3 weeks and all of a sudden you're a brother. No, you trying to be a brother and trying to learn how to do this thing. But some of these guys I know and deal with, they're out here for 20, 30 years, and they never get the respect as brothers because the brothers seem to always get dissed. It seems like the community always would accept these Uncle Tom dudes that's in either a position of social status or in a position of political status or a position of religious status. When these Uncle Tom dudes come out here and they're supposed to be for the community, but in the back room, they for themselves. They not really for the community. I never see them making the sacrifice necessary. I never see them out here really doing anything, but I always see them when the cameras roll. I always see them out front saying that they leading the community. When the person tell me they leading, I want to know where you going. If you leading the community, do you have a concrete plan for the community? What's your basis? What's your five topics? What's your five discussion points? What is it that you hold as here is my agenda? What's the agenda that you have? So if you don't have that, I don't consider you a leader. If you're a leader and you say you're leading the community, where are you taking the community? What's your plan for the community? Where you see Wilmington community, and I'm talking about black people, in the next 5 or 10 years? Where you see African Americans in 5 or 10 years? If you can't tell me that, I don't consider you a leader. So when I say brothers, I mean brothers. Brothers that I come to, I Glenn. That's a brother to me. Kahan is a brother to me. And I got other brothers that I consider brothers. But some of the other brothers I just consider associates because their agenda is not aligned with the total agenda of black people. They don't have to be aligned with my agenda. They can have their own agenda. But when I see them walking aimlessly with no agenda, not reading, not studying, have nothing to bring to the conversation, I really don't consider them brothers. So I may change the name. We got to discuss that to Support the Conscious. But it's just a support show, And last week we got into a conversation and Glenn brought up the book. And I said, you know what, that'll be a good piece to cover for about 2 weeks. And we may go back and forth with other books, but this particular book in particular, Behold a Pale Horse. The call-in number is 563-999-3079. Let me give that out this morning. 563-999-39. And I'm going to bring in my good brother, who I call a brother, my good brother, Brother Mr. Wilson, Glenn Wilson, because I consider him one of the most well-read brothers. There are very few, you know, that I know that are well-read in Wilmington, North Carolina. When I mean well-read, meaning that brothers that read books and study books and have a, not just limited on one area, read books. I mean, very we got away from reading and study. Some of us, and Glenn, as he will tell you, lately he's become a YouTube obsessed guy. However, he can get away with that because he's read. I see a lot of brothers out here that's YouTube obsessed, get away on YouTube and get all this stuff, but they ain't got four books in the dictionary, three books, two books, one book in the dictionary. You go in that house, they don't see no books. If I walk in your house and you ain't got a book, you ain't got a place to keep your books, we ain't really got much to talk about. I'm sorry. Me and you, really, we can talk business. We can talk what you got mail. But if I walk into your house and you don't have a book cabinet or a place to keep books, I don't consider us on the same level. And that's just not putting myself on a different level. I'm just on a different level than a person who don't read. I've been reading most of my life, and people who read most of the time have a sense to know a little bit more than the person who don't read. So that being said, I'm going to bring in my good reading brother, Mr. Wilson. How you doing this morning, good brother?
Good morning, brother. Peace and blessings. Good morning, Mr. Elamine. I'm up and at it, feeling a little conscious this morning. I hope I can fill out all those compliments you gave me in the introduction there. But we'll see. We'll see where it goes.
Start with one question. I'm gonna do some questions. I may inject some stuff here and there that I've got in the book. I had to order. Let me tell you, I couldn't find my book, so I had to order another copy. So those who need the book, you can find it on Amazon for $14.99. It comes. You'll get it in a day. Amazon got so good, man. I use Amazon for everything. But you can order from Amazon for $14.99. You can order it today; it'll be here tomorrow. Simple as that. It takes one day to ship. Most stuff on Amazon now, so I ordered some stuff for Amazon last night. I'm waiting on. I wanted me a. I've been sitting around a house, and I've been doing it for years. Saying it for years, man. I wanted me a Congo, a drum, right? You know the drum circle. And so
yeah,
I
was at the drum circle this week.
Oh, where are you? So last night, I've always wanted to get back to drumming. I used to drum before. I was in the music heavy, and I always wanted me. So last night, I found one on Amazon, real good price on it, mahogany. And so I'm waiting for that to be delivered this morning. But let's get back to the book, Behold a Pale Horse. First of all, how did you get the book? How did you get in? Because I know how I got the book. What attracted you to the book at this stage in your life? And how did you find out about
it? I've heard the title of the book, I don't know, over some years past, you know, but I never even went and investigated or did any research on it or about it. I just heard it bandied about it. Maybe I read about it. But anyway, the history of my knowledge in the past 2 or 3 weeks, I've read several chapters, you know, maybe first through six chapters. Interestingly, Dawood, you talk about reading, and I have a cousin that is a former school teacher. She does Amazon. She sends me books as gifts, you know, every year for my birthday. If she reads something, she think I might be interested, she'll go to Amazon and have it delivered to me, you know, next day or whatever. So she sent me a couple of books a few months ago. One I had read about, It was called the National Sunday Law. And we being people that try to observe the Sabbath as the seventh day as the day of worship, whatever, we're seeing that this National Sunday Law may become law of the nation. And this is something that, you know, the Catholic Church changed the day of worship from this, from the seventh day into the first day. That's the history of that. So I'd already read that book. But she sent me, behold, a pale horse along with that. And there is an interesting link between those books, because it's what it's showing is that we are being controlled by a certain class of people. Us working regular people are being controlled. That's what's the link between those books. But anyway, she sent me the book about 3 or 4 months ago. And I never got around to reading it until my phone started acting up and I couldn't get onto my YouTube videos. So I picked the book up. I picked the book up after it laid around for 3 or 4 months gathering dust. And I became instantly attracted to it. You know, I went through the first 3 chapters like, wow. You know, I was interested, you know, because if I wasn't interested, sometimes I lay it back down. And everything this author, this William Cooper had to say in those first 3 chapters, it caught my interest. And so the book had been in my possession for 3 or 4 months, but I've only opened the pages in the last couple of weeks. And, you know, when I would last week when we were broadcasting, when we on the, me, you, and Kahan were having our weekly conversation, I just brought it up, man, you know, because it was something in our conversation that stirred, that made me link it to this book. And so that's the history of me, and it's just only a recent history. I've been hearing about it because I think this book has been around for like 30 years or more. And I just recently opened the pages to it, and I had a strong interest in the content.
Well, so when you brought it up last week, when you brought it up, the first thing I thought about was William Cooper. Were you aware of his death and how he died?
No, I had never heard that name until I saw it on the front page of Behold a Pale Horse. And then I read, you know, he had forewords and he had like a short autobiography, a biography of his family. And so I didn't even know if he was dead.
But yes, he is.
Go ahead, Double.
So I think it was 1998. In 1998, Clinton was in office. And so, you know, I think he published his book in 91. That's when I first heard about the book through the Nation. So I was in the Nation. I was searching in the Nation back then in the early 90s. Let me tell you how I got to the book. So I came into the book through the Nation. What happened was, and I'm going to say this publicly on the air because I need to say this, because a lot of people don't give credit where credit is due. I don't know if anybody remember, but between 85 and 95, I will say, especially the late 80s. In the late 80s, crack about took over America. I came back home in 81. No, 80. I left 81. I came back home in 83 from the military. When I left to go in 81, we were still on weed. I mean, because I was still my last senior year in school. I was selling pen joints. I remember getting a bag of weed, getting a 20 bag, rolling up about 20 joints, get a 10 bag, roll up about 20 joints, and go to school and sell them for $1 a piece, make double of my money. That was an everyday thing. Go to school, sell them for $1 a piece to the white boys, make double your money, joke with everybody, smoke their lunch break, and I wasn't a smoker, so I was making money because I wasn't getting high on my own supply. That was before Biggie came out with the lyrics. So, and I was a preacher's son doing this. So I would preach on Sunday, sell weed during the weekday. That's why I'm having a hard time with people in the middle, because I was one of those middle dwellers. I go in the military, I be smoking weed. I come back home, I'm a cocaine addict, because I end up overseas trying a lot of different drugs, having come from Jehovah's Witness background, had never did drugs before. I did heroin. I tried acid. I tried the downers. I tried the pills. They called them, we used to call them dogs over there. But finally, I found cocaine. And I just happened to find cocaine during the same time I had another military hustle where I had the money, because I was a PFC during that time period, driving a BMW in Germany. And I got hooked on cocaine. So I come back home, $100 a day cocaine addict. I used to have a spoon around my neck snorting cocaine. So I'm hooked on cocaine now. I come back home, they ain't doing cocaine. They even went from cocaine to freebasing on that end, and then you got crack. So I came back home, and it went from I done left weed. I come back home, introduced the powder cocaine. I come back, folks doing powder cocaine, but then they start freebasing. Well, once they start freebasing was burning up your money so quick. And then they came out with crack during the late 80s. So now, in my area, everybody's getting hooked on crack. I tried crack one time. The high was too high for me. I ain't never want to try it again. That was the only first and last time, but I just couldn't deal with the high. I said, ain't no way in the world anybody's supposed to be this high. And I had enough knowledge of self in me at that time that I wasn't able to get hooked on it. Anyway, I say that to say, during that time period, in the 80s, when it came to knowledge, when it came to people disseminating information, we got all this information on Facebook, YouTube, videos, and all that. During that time period, the one number one source of knowledge was a cassette tape come out every week, and it was the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. Whenever Farrakhan dropped the new cassette tape, that cassette tape was circle light doing community like Game 5. We traded cassette tapes like we were trading baseball cards. You got How to Give Birth to God, I got How to Eat to Live. You got True Christian Colors, I got Have No Fear. We were trading cassette tapes. We would play them in our car and ride around with the minister, because that was our source of what we call knowledge. That was our, because at that time, Kwame Ture was getting old. He was quiet. The Panthers were non-existent during that time period. The minister was number one. Plus, you had Collie getting on the Donahue show. They were making news. And this was all before the Million Man Mark. So you got to realize between the 88, 89, 90, 91, 92, up until the Million Man March. When we talk about when Dr. Umo say he's the number one bestseller, during that time period, Farrakhan reigned supreme. Nobody in the black community was talking like Farrakhan. Nobody. Everybody was scared to death, hanging his head, niggas. Wasn't very few preachers. Wasn't no preacher out here like this man out here. What's his name? I can't think of his name right now. But like the Christian preachers talking like that. You didn't have Christian, you ain't people talking about black Jesuses. You didn't have people, it was Farrakhan. And Farrakhan became, I'm going to tell you how big Farrakhan became. Farrakhan became so big that even though he was in the nation, you didn't attribute him to the nation. It wasn't like you had to love the nation and Farrakhan at the same time. Nah, you could love Farrakhan and not have nothing to do with the nation. You had to join because he was selling out arenas like 50 Cent and MC Hammer. Farrakhan was selling out 10,000, 20,000 arenas, sold out, and people were wrapped around the book. He sold out New York. He sold out Madison Square Garden with the power tool. Sold it out, and the Jacob Javits Center, the center next door, was filled to the brim. That was in the early 90s, 91, 92, before he even did the march. So during that time period, anything that circulated among the nation, it grabbed hold in the black community. Even Dr. York's community back then had to tribute to the nation. So because of that, their book started selling. The minister came out with a tape, and he came out with a tape called None. It was a book called None Dare Call It a Conspiracy. And that's the number one book he used to give us that led us to this book. So what happened is brothers read that book, and then they found out this book was in the 90s. I think brother launched this was 91. This book came out. And when Behold the Pale Horse came out, it became like the standard of Bible if you were a what they call, quote-unquote, conspiracy theorist or if you were what they call anti-government, or trying to point out, people call it anti-government. What these brothers do is point out what the government is doing that you can't see that's right in front of your eyes. So that's how I got in touch with the Behold the Pale Horse. Well, and after 10 years, going back to how he died, 10 years after this book is released, he gets into an argument throughout here and got the research on it with the IRS. You know, they always bring the taxes up on your ass. 3 years they were trying to serve this warrant on him, but he didn't feel that they really was trying to fill the warrant on him. He thought they was trying to kill him. And so he ducked them and ducked them and ducked them in 3 years. And then all, you know, they like the Ridge case. They had a shootout. And you didn't hear about it. It really didn't make big news. They had a shootout, and in the shootout, he was died, and that was it. That was last year, though. They had a shootout, I think it was 2021, 20-something like that. And when they had the shootout, he was killed in the shootout. And it was like, it made a blip on the news, and that was it. That's all.
Wow.
William Cooper, that was it. It was a blip.
Wow.
He was shot by him. He said, I will definitely not take me alive.
I didn't do the research on his life. I picked the book up. And, you know, I know he had some age on him. I might have assumed that he had passed away.
I did too.
From the way he wrote and the information that he had, he researched, because he went through a lot of trouble to find out, you know, these facts about this government. You know, all the way to the point that he said, we have a second government, we have a hidden government that's ready to take over anytime that the political government we got now, anytime the citizenry, we the citizens wake up enough to start resisting, there's going to be a backup government to come in and do us like the Nazis did the Jews in World War II, according to him, according to William Cooper.
So Gifford, what you got so far, take the time and give us an overview. Give us an overview of where William Hooper is coming from, prior, the first couple of chapters prior to the UFO, we get the UFOs later on. I think we do UFOs next week. Right now, this week, give us an overview of how you see him on a grand scale. What is his overall, like, three points, his philosophy, his agenda?
Well, what I took, Dawood, and I did a quick, like I said, I went through it quick, but sometimes, you know, you can go slowly and read and absorb it, or you can go through it quick, and I kind of went through this quick, you know, and I'm a slow thinker, so I shouldn't have gone through it as quick as I have. The lady that gave me the book, my cousin, a retired teacher, I let her know this morning, and she was, and that's what the question I want to ask you before I get started on my overview is, will this, are you reproducing this? Can somebody hear this later on?
We're on live right now, and for those that's on live, I'm on Facebook right now live, 563-999-3079 is where we at, and I will reproduce it. It's already being recorded, so it will be redistributed, because I think it's very valuable what you're going to give us. So I'm going to redistribute it out so I can send her a direct link.
Okay, well, I let her know that because she's a reader and she's the one that gifted me the book.
Yeah.
She believes this is good reading. And she asked me because she was not
able. And let her know
that
we are going to do more of this. We are going to take this book.
Right,
I think it's
right.
Going to take us out, get Kahan back next week. We get 2 good weeks. And then we'll go to another book, because I think that's important for these people that are young revolutionaries to understand the material that we have consumed to call ourselves revolutionaries.
Well, I let her know and some people know, but she was not able. She's not able to call in this morning.
Okay.
And she asked me, would she be able to hear this later on, because she's really interested in what we have to say.
Okay.
And she's aware of you. I'm her cousin, you know, and so, you know, she was not able to do this. So, but she's a reader, and the history on us is that after I left here in 71, Dawood, and I ended up in Chicago, graduated from high school. So I'm well aware of the nation because I ended up in the headquarters of the nation. So yep. Farrakhan, like you said, was everywhere. He was on TV. He was in the barbershop. People were doing the cassette tape. I ended up in 77, I ended up in the steel mill in Gary, Indiana. Well, of course, the nation was in Gary, Indiana, you know, it's a border city. But in my overview, I would like to say that I became aware that after I left Wilmington of the secret society, what the government and what our national heroes were really like. You know, I was ended up in the 10th grade in a high school in Chicago where I had a black male as a history teacher, American history. And he threw out the textbook and had us go buy a paperback that really told the truth about American history. And also during that time, we was experiencing Watergate. We had Fred Hampton was murdered in my time, and you know, the trial was coming out, and that's when I began to understand the wickedness in the government, you know, because, you know, growing up down here in what was Mayberry, we had learned to respect the police, respect authority. And then to find out at 17, 18 years old that authority was really wicked and controlling. So in saying that, my overview of what Mr. Cooper was trying to let us know is you need to wake up. And I mean, information, just, you know, I can say, I can use the word conspiracy here because some of it came out like that to me, you know. But we are not in control. We are like sheep, you know. We're like sheep in a herd, you know, the American citizen. And so what I got out of the first three or four chapters is that there is a lot of work being done to make sure, even with the media, to make sure we regular citizens, don't working class citizens, don't know what's really, really going on. It sort of reminded me of the wrestler that was the governor of Minnesota, Jesse Ventura.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's what the information coming out, you know, because I was totally blind until I was 16, 17 years old. I was here in Wilmington. I left just before they grabbed, I left in 71 just before they grabbed up the Wilmington 10. And I was reading about that while I was in Chicago. Then I get to Chicago and I see how these the district attorney, Hanrahan, and all these people conspired against Fred Hampton. And they killed him while he was laying in bed next to his pregnant wife. I started, you know, and that's what piqued my interest, you know, the history, because I finally found out about the real history of America. At the same time, I'm looking at all this, these systems of control, especially in our community, that were being revealed, you know, and it was coming out in the open. Also, you had the nation that was very strong in Chicago, because that's their headquarters. So I'm being exposed to all this at 18, 19 years old, you know, coming out of high school. And so to see this book 50 years later, almost, Dawood, it speaks to me because it lets me know that there are systems in place and there are people working every day who I may rub shoulders with that are making sure that I'm in control. And then my really big overview, Dawood, Underview, Professor Umar said, Dr. Umar said, overstand, understand, and understand is that there are systems that are at work all the time to make sure that we react a certain way. He was talking about the economics, the Rothschilds, how they control whole economies and have nations pitted against each other and sell weapons to both sides. You know, they always come out ahead. How they control us through the economy, the IRS. One factor that really stood out to me, Dawood, and I'm going to go back and highlight it, is when he talked about how we raise our children to be God-fearing, respectful of the law, respectful of your government, respect the flag, but how at 18 and 19, and I'm sure you might be able to relate to this, Dawood, you and Brother Kahan, I never went in the military. But we let our children, or we give them permission to go into the military and go fight wars for these wicked governments. You know, we raised them to be in church, we raised them to be God-fearing, we raised them to be, but then we got the we got these wicked governments that sent our young men off, our young people off to die in other countries for the greed of the people that run the government. It's not, they really don't tell you why you're really not, you're fighting for no reason at all. You're fighting because you're young and your parents and everybody's been raised to respect the flag and to defend our country. When actually our country, this country here, is only pushing an agenda of greed and dominance. So that's what I got out of the first two chapters and how they had a lot of information for us, from us, how the media is a party to that, of keeping us like sheep, you know, like dumb blind sheep. And so for some reason, his interest was piqued, maybe because of his military service, because he goes as far as to talk about there being spacecraft or UFOs,
yeah,
you know, that we don't know about.
Well, he got lumped in that UFO conversation because he was heavy on that. I want to read something he said, and I want to get your comment on it, because you were right there at that point. He said, in his introduction, he said, I cannot and will not accept the theory that long sequences of unrelated accidents determine world events. It is inconceivable that those with power and wealth would not band together with a common bond, a common interest, and a long-range plan to decide and direct the future of the world. For those with the resources to do otherwise would be totally irresponsible.
Okay, now that's on page 2. Of the introduction.
Yeah.
And what he's saying,
he was saying it would be basically irresponsible. You would expect them to do this, what they're actually doing. That's how he expects us to see it.
Oh, now I'm seeing it. For those with the resources to do otherwise would be totally irresponsible. So he's saying if they allowed us regular people to do as we wanted to do, they would that would be irresponsible.
That would be irresponsible.
Is that what he's saying?
Yeah, that's what he. So here's my point. So, and I want to ask you this question reading the book, because over the years, I have dealt with Mr. Cooper a whole lot of different ways, and I deal with him in in the time span. Good book, excellent material. We got to have it and need it. However, a lot of times, these conspiracy theorists pretend like they are befriending the masses of poor people. When I say poor people, I'm talking about me and you. And me and you ain't poor. We got money. We got enough to live off of. But when I say poor, we don't have the resources of the 1% and the 10%. So when he talks about the 1%, to me, I don't know why the conspiracy theorists are always arguing with the 1%. Because the 1%, in a sense, support who they are as conspiracy theorists. He just said it would be irresponsible for the 1% not to do otherwise. Have you noticed that most of the most of the conspiracy theorists are already paid? Most of the conspiracy theorists are not poor people. Most of the Republicans, those red ring, redneck motherfuckers that wanted us to send us back to Africa, that those Trump followers, they ain't poor people. They most of the time come from the military. That means they got a 20-year retirement. Sometimes a husband and wife in the military, they got a 20-year retirement. They come from law enforcement. They got 20 years retirement. Wherever they come from, most of them are, very few of them are poor white trailer trash. Most of those conspiracy boys, the big ones like him, come from deep, rich families within the government. His father was in the government. His granddaddy was in the government. So they come from checks. They come from money, and they come from experience. And here's the reason why I point that out. Right next to that, on the second page, and I love the book. I love him for pointing it out. But I have to also check and see what are these really people really saying. On the next page, he said this. And he's talking about black people. Because I'm always watching conspiracy theories and black people. He said, I fear for the little ones, the innocents, who are already paying for our mistakes. There exists a great army of occupationally orphaned children. They are attending government-controlled daycare centers and latchkey kids who are running wild in the streets. And the lopsided, emotionally wounded children of single welfare mothers, born only for the sake of more money and a monthly check. Being born only for the sake of money and a monthly check. That is paramount to what Democrats say about us and Republicans say about the black community.
Well,
so I wanted to know, what was your take on his relationship with us?
Well, my eyes fell on that passage you just read, because I wanted
you
to go back
okay,
and
okay,
review.
What gets me? Okay, good. I just want to make
I
sure
wanted
it
to go
me.
Back and review. My eyes fell on that passage last night before I went to sleep.
Okay.
And I thought about black, the welfare queen syndrome, all that stuff they say about us, which is not true. There's more welfare was created for white widows, and more white people on welfare than black people, only numerically, because we only 15%, 20% of the population, and they're 60%. So the system. It was not created for us, but then they turned it, they flipped it, and used. And here's the conspiracy thing, Lavoe. Propaganda is used. Now, I thought, and that's the first thing I thought was the black single mother, because I was raised by one. First thing I thought when I read that passage last night before I went to sleep. And you asked me, what do I think he was military.
But his best friend was black, and the other one was, got me on that side.
Right. So he was military, and he hung out. As far as I read his history of his days in the military, he was very close to a black man.
Yes, sir.
His partner, his running buddy. So, and by him having peeped under the covers, he knows what the welfare is really about, and he knows the power of propaganda and the media, that they can sway. As Malcolm said, the media will have you thinking that the criminal is the good guy, and that the real good and the really good guy is the criminal. They can persuade you, and like our brother Donald Trump can show us, that even though we look at a video of something, it really didn't happen. Are you going to believe me or your lying eyes? So this is all coming to some kind of fruition, Dawood, because of that one guy the orange dictator is showing us. You don't believe facts. You don't believe your eyes. You believe what I tell you to believe. And he's
so
got
that's
a
what
whole
I,
party. But
that's what I saw him. So that's what I saw him doing. And glad you brought it right to Trump, because I saw him doing a Trump before Trump even learned how to do it. Knowing his background, what it was with black people and his other friend, I think he had a black friend who was an Indian and an African. They were all hung together. But knowing his background, his history, he was pretty cool and tight with them. For him to put that statement in there, to me, what he was doing, he was appealing to his, knowing that most blacks wasn't going to get the book. He knew who his audience base was. He was appealing to the rednecks so that they would continue to read further into the book so they could get educated. But he used that to appeal to track them in, because he knew better than the welfare. He knew what he was writing. He wrote that. He knew better. And so I see Trump do the same thing a lot of times. Trump know better on what he be saying. He just be appealing to his audience base because he know I can get them upset and bring them in and make a wedge. And a lot of times that's what I see a lot of folks do in this network, especially today with this way the social media is. They got an audience base they talking to, and they know better. But they'll say something to suck them in. And I looked at us as black people on that particular end. So I'm glad you saw that.
Well,
I wasn't going crazy.
Well, Dawoo, like I said, that's what I first thought, was the single mother, the struggling with kids, getting food stamps or whatever. And I've experienced that in my life. But, you know, my mother came out of that, you know, in later years. But what I'm saying, she wasn't a welfare mother. She was always working, but she did need assistance because it was hard. And we were living in Chicago, take care of two kids on the job that she had. So everybody needed help in my community at one time. I was raised on food stamps and part of my life. So, but that is propaganda, though, Dawood. It's not true. It's not true that our whole community is raised by welfare mothers. But, I mean, lately. But at the time he wrote this, the book was published in 91.
1990, yeah. That was the perceived notion.
But that was the propaganda that Reagan and put out there.
Yeah.
The welfare queen. The guy named Willie that got out of jail and committed murder. That's propaganda. Same way that Hitler propagandized against the Jews in Germany for years before they rose up and just started mass attacking them. You know, he propagandized. He propagandized, and that's what America is doing. And they're still doing it to us. And like you say, we can bring it to Trump. Trump has done more. And I look back, besides now the sin he committed, Dawoo, when he pulled out that full-page ad recommending death sentence for those five boys, the Central Park Five. But, and then maybe him and his dad wasn't housing black people. But if you look at all the partnerships he had, in the entertainment business, in the boxing arena, he was always making profit with black people. And then before he got out of office, he pardoned a lot of black rappers that would still be in jail right now. So one of his biggest fans.
Big man, you point that out. That's why I keep saying, over the airwaves, I've been saying what I've been saying about Trump consistently, and I haven't wavered off Trump since me and you went with me. You were the only one bold enough to go with me and stand in line to go see him at UNCW. Even though we didn't get in, we had a good conversation with a bunch of white folks all day long, figuring out where their head was at. And I've always said consistently, the reason why anybody reading this book, they can get an answer why they don't. They could shut Trump down tomorrow. The reason they don't fuck with Trump, because they don't know how far Trump will go. Trump might expose the book. he might start telling that shit that they don't want nobody to know. He already know this shit to be true. So they not going to fuck with him but so much because he's been the only president that will challenge them and say, look, you keep fucking with me, you want to, I'm going to tell it. You keep fucking with me.
Well,
and that's what he's telling them. He's pushing back at them because he's telling them, you keep fucking with me, I'm going to tell all your little dirty secrets. That's what they're afraid of.
Well, the thing about it called populism, he's very popular for some reason because he represents, and I don't know how to say this right now, but he represents what white people are really like. That's all. They can identify with him.
Yes. I've been saying that since the day I went on the radio and said, years ago, he was going to win. Everybody thought I was crazy then. People can talk about the background all day long. I never forget what the minister told me the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said. And that doesn't put Muslims above anybody else. But we know the Caucasian better than anyone else. That's the basis of our history, the study of the Caucasian. He told the minister, he said, I will have you so wise to the study of the Caucasian that you will have him wrapped around your finger and you wouldn't know that he existed unless you look at him. We don't even think about them when we make a decision. We make a decision based on what's the best beneficial decision for our, it's like my heart. Somebody asked me the other day, they said, Dad, what's your hierarchy? My hierarchy is God, family, then my community. God, family, community. Then knowledge and then economics. Man, I don't even call it economics. I call it resources. That's my hierarchy. But God, family, and community first. That's how we make decisions. My decision making is not based on how he gonna think about it. That's how they got us conditioned. But no, once you understand how he operates, once you understand that this always going to be his country, once you understand the book. Everybody get this book and read it because that's the one thing it's his country. And when he talks, and I want to get your comment on that. When you see the 1%, because he talks about that one, we used to call it, we used to call it the 5%, 10%, the 1%. You know, the 5%, the 85%, and the 10%. That's what we used to call. We used to say the 5% was the poor righteous teachers. The 10% was those that controlled that 10%. And then the 85% was the mass of people. He calls them a 1%. He gets to the degree that they're 1%. Most people say that now that group now is a 1%. That's a 1% who controls most of the wealth of America. When he talks about that hierarchy, that secret society, how do you see that? Because in layman's terms, how do you see it? Because I know how I see it. How do you see it? Because it's very complex sometimes. People think it's like a conspiracy. How do you see that?
You read the passage where it says that the last word he says, for those with the resources to do otherwise would be totally irresponsible. And he's talking about making long range plans to control the environment, to control the sheep. The shepherd is trying to control the sheep. So he also said, the sentence behind that, he said, I know that I would be the first to organize a conspiracy to control the outcome of the future. If I was such a person and a conspiracy did not yet exist, I would do it in an attempt to ensure the survival of the principles in which I believe. I believe the survival of my family, my survival, and the survival of the human race, if for no reason. So he said he would control the outcome if he had the resources. He would do it. He would do the same thing. He's actually saying that right after he said it would be irresponsible for those with the resources not to control the outcome. So
yeah,
he has a power. He's thinking from a power mentality also. And as you said, Dawood,
I think a lot of times with us as black people, we don't understand that power control mentality he's thinking from. So he's fighting a group that has a power control, He's presenting the information in this book because he now thinks I need to put in another power and control group that can control the ones who have the power and control. But at the end of the day, we forget as black people sometimes, we still not included because he comes right down in his creed and he says, I believe first in God, the same God in which my ancestors believed in. And I know which one that was. That was the one that enslaved black folks. Then he said, I believe in Jesus Christ and that he is my savior. Secondly, I believe in the Constitution, Republic of the United States of America without interruption.
Could
we don't want
stop,
it to be changed at all.
I said interruption.
It should have been interpretation. Well, I'll stop right there. Go ahead.
Could you stop right there for a minute? Let me interject.
Yes, sir. You got it.
They created their own Jesus Christ in their white image.
Come on.
They created their own belief. So in order to convince us with the white Jesus, they put in front of us, the slave, that God is white. Okay. Second, I believe in the Constitution of the Republic of the United States of America without interpretation as it was written and meant to work.
Come on.
We weren't included in that Constitution.
Come on.
No, we were 3/5 of a human being in that Constitution.
Come on.
You know, so, and he is given a sacred oath to protect and defend the Constitution. So he's still speaking from that white, dominant, oppressor mentality in a lot of ways.
Yeah, but
that's
it's good information, though. Don't take us wrong. I don't want people to take it wrong that we're dismissing the book. The book information is good. I just don't want you to go into the book. Those of you who have never read it that's listening to the show saying, hey, I might want to read that. I don't want you to go into it with a blind eye. And I don't want you to stop when you read that and say, well, I ain't reading no rest of it. No, go get the rest of the information. We just want to point that out because we don't want you going any further with a blind eye and not realizing we still need to be controlling our own destiny. And we still need to be getting out of it because the pale horse has a revelational context. It wasn't just one pale horse. There were several more horses. We'll talk about that on another show. Get out of here, my people. Go ahead, Glenn.
Well, as I was saying, when he said that creed, and he said, I believe in it, and I would give my life if it is required in defense of God, Constitution, or my family. So he's still in that dominant group. That is, I mean, you know, as Neely Fuller says, they created the white supremacist system, and it is for them. It is for them. They were 10% of the earth population rule the earth. So, as you were saying, Dawu, and we can bring this up to date now, we got a black man. We got a well-known black man that we talked about last week. That's calling itself running a third party for president on the Green Party.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. West.
Yes, sir.
So now, this is probably what William Cooper was doing. He was trying to gather his power in another movement. He still come out of, and as you made a point of, that all these people that come against what we assume the standard government practice have already been involved in the government. They have been involved in some way in whether you say they come from the law enforcement or they come from the military. I mean, Jesse Ventura was like, what was he, special forces?
Wrestling. William Cooper was in charge of A-bomb stuff. He was a time of nuclear material.
Okay.
He had special clearance. This military, if you go through the forward and read his background, this joker had secret clearance.
Well, I did read it. He was military because he talked about being in Hawaii. He talked about being there, in the submarine. You know, so, you know, he was involved.
That's why I can give credence I can give credence that the government, when they talk about the people that know him and say the government had him killed, I can give credence to that, because based on his military background alone, he'd be like my son when my son come out. My son come out of the military, he ain't gonna have to work another day in his life. He gonna be paid. His credentials are gonna be so high. Once you get those kind of clearance, I applied for a job. I'll give you an example. I applied for a job last night over in Gambia. You know, I'm always looking for backup, right? Because I'm out of here. But I'm always going that way. So I thought about the Maersk line. You know, I'm trying to get into travel, trade, and export. And the Maersk Container Company had a job opening. So it was a job opening in Senegal, but I could drive back and forth. I said, man, let me put in for that job. So I put in for the job. But along with it was another job. The other job was a job working for the embassy of Gambia. So I said, well, let me look at that one. Well, they needed a special community liaison from the embassy. Well, I said, well, that's fit right down my, you know, my line of work. You know, community, I got no covers over there. Boom, boom, boom. Gave the description. Want you to be able to be a contact for the community. Always report back to the embassy what's going on, blah, 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 blah. You know, of course. Okay, so I'm going to go put in for that one. No, sir, brother, you don't qualify. We need a number top 10. You need a level 10 security clearance. So I say that to say, he exactly. Could apply for a job that. I don't have that level 10 security. I could apply for the job working on the ship, but I couldn't apply for that embassy job.
Right. You have to spend some time to learn the real systems of control. You know, you ain't spent enough time. You did a couple of years. You had to spend some time to learn what's really going on.
Yeah.
You know. You so came out to find out what was really going on, but you had to spend some time in there. You had to learn how to work that system and work it and help make that system and improve that system. Then you're allowed to come out. And but then when you go against that system, you might be the first one to get knocked down. When you're revealing, like you said about Trump, Trump can reveal he's been in the inner workings of the American wealthy class all his life.
Yes.
You know what they do or what they don't do?
You remember when he ran, he said, I'm going to beat you on taxes because I know the system better than anybody else. He said, I could fix your tax system if you let me because I know where the loopholes are.
Right.
He knows the system he going to is broke down. He know they can't charge him for so far because he got a messed up system.
And then he did, during the debate, Dawood, he told Hillary, you and your friends use the system.
Yeah. Because it's their system.
Me and you pay more taxes than those wealthy people. We pay more taxes than the millionaires. And
being based on what we make. Yeah, So I want to get in something right quickly.
Right,
I want to get into you would have, you read more, you more a reader than me. Explain FEMA to me. Have you get to the FEMA chapter yet?
I read about the FEMA. That's going to be control of the flow of us, you know, when doing emergencies and stuff.
Do that overview for those that might be, because FEMA, that's chapter red. That's the one first one. A couple read them. That's the first one. I knew about the Illuminati. Heard about that theory. But that's the first one that caught my full attention was FEMA. Because I know this is a hurricane town. And how FEMA, explain that. Give an overview of that situation.
Well, from what I read, like I said, I went through it real quick. But then I was surprised. This emergency, and then I thought about it. That's what it said, Federal Emergency Management.
Exactly. Never thought about it like that.
Federal Emergency Management. That's what it ain't just about natural disasters. It's about any kind of bullshit that come up. You know? I have to put this, make a point of this, Dawood. They keep talking about civil war now. And now that Trump is still the central character in this drama, in this play, because if he doesn't get what he wants, a certain element of society is going to rise up. So they say. I believe in a lot of conspiracy theories.
Here's the difference. Hold on. Here is the difference I think people forget about. That's why I say, if they get out of her, it ain't about it moving yet, but I'm gone. But anyway, here's the thing I think people forget to realize. When we say so, they say, they other than the last time Patrick Henry and them boys said it, they was the last people to say they gonna do something and did it. Most of the time, America say they, I mean, most of the time, groups in America say they gonna do something, they just lip servicing. And when they stormed the Capitol, they wasn't lip servicing. They was so they say. They letting you know, this is smart. This what we and will so, go to. We'll go there.
And so there's an element of American society, and I think it's 30% that's behind him, that will do this. They will rise up. They will put us in concentration camps. Those of us ain't got sense enough to leave.
Yep.
They will put you in concentration camp. He's out there. FEMA. So what I saw, I read, they already got the plan. They got a second government. They got a backup government to control the flow and the movement of people wherever they. He said they're going to put you in work camp. They're going to break up families. This ain't nothing they ain't already done. They did that in slavery.
They
perfected the technique. The Germans followed the American blueprint when they were exterminating the Jews in Germany. That was an American blueprint that Hitler was following. So they done this in America already. Control the flow of bodies. Send them to work camp. Plantation. Broke up families. Took your child. Never saw your child again. Or control your breeding. Put a bag over your head. And you had sex with your mother unknowingly. That's where the word MF or motherfucker comes from.
I think a lot of folks don't realize that when we say so they say, and we're talking about those that say, when that rise happens, and I believe it's going to happen. I'm not trying to get out of here and working every day to get out of here because I don't believe it's going to happen. The only problem is I got to find another way for what I'm going to explain to you right now. When that happens, the American dollar that controls a lot of the world's economy is going to fluctuate so bad it's going to go down. That is why they want to keep this going for that dollar. That is why other currency resources, those countries like China, they're going to be okay. But all those countries in between going to have to make a decision. Am I going to go over here with China and their money? Or am I going to try to ride this motherfucker out and thinking America's going to come back up? Because civil war will disrupt this country so that dollar will be so fucked up. If I'm living in Gambia, I have to already be thinking my rank right now. I'm not putting all my money that I'm taking in one currency or putting it in one place. And here's the reason why. Stuck over in Gambia and I'm waiting for my check to be deposited into the mail every month, which is my retirement. When that dollar fucks up, I'm a poor person in Gambia, bro. I'm just a poor the rest of it if I'm calculating that dollar only. That's why I'm already prepared to go over there and start producing over there to make money so I have a income or have something to barter with over there. Because what if it fucks up over here, I've already calculated. That's how far I calculate. You be like, well, you just going after. Don't think I ain't did my homework. What I think predict is going to happen in America happens. I pray it don't, but I think it will. I have to prepare for that. It may. What gets me with black people is we ain't preparing either way. We're not preparing for it to collapse or to stay. We just walk around willy-nilly in the dark like everything going to be a hand hole, bro. You got to prepare,
prepare
both ways.
Well, Brother Dabu, we are prepared through religion to believe that God is going to save us.
Yeah.
I looked at Brother Umar the other day. The religion has fooled you. Not to do anything. They believe that there's a savior that's going to come get you. And you're right. We're not prepared. The best thing we do is follow the blueprint of the dominant society. More of them are on that plane going to Gambia than you. And they're investing. And they're taking their money over there and they're buying land. And they're growing crops and produce. And they're starting businesses. We got some blacks that's doing it too. But not in the number they're doing it.
Do you know how quick you can take $25,000 over there and come up on some land of your own, growing your own food? Overnight.
Right. They've been over there for centuries, Dawood. They run the world. All you got to do, the blueprint is already out. We just refuse to follow the blueprint because the dominant society throws certain systems of control in to control your thinking and to divert you from thinking about what real business is. I heard Farrakhan say this. They send you to college. You black people go to college. And you pay your tuition and you get in debt to learn how to run a business for him. He don't teach you the science of business, which is life itself. He teach you how to run a business to make profit for him so his life will be better. He teach you business management. He don't teach you the real science of business. I heard Farrakhan say that.
Yeah.
So they're like an ant or an animal in the jungle where you know survival is based on your strength and how you can sneak up on somebody and attack because you only got one chance in the jungle.
Yeah.
You're either going to eat or be eaten.
That's it.
So we have been a religion for 700 years, which Karl Marx said the religion was the opiate of the masses. We, the black masses, believe in religion and white Jesus more than the white man. He invented that. He don't believe in none of that. He believes in his own whiteness, and he believes in his dollar. Now, when that fails, which eventually is failing to cause him they have influence right now, but he still runs whole economies over in Europe and Africa and all over the world. But when that American dollar failed, which you just spoke on, it's going to, because every great empire has fallen. Rome, whatever, and it collapsed from within. So let's move on to Professor West, who's trying to say, let's have compassion. Let's have a brotherhood across the world. Some of us, usually people that are white-skinned, don't think that way. If they're not dominating, fuck it, we'll tear it down. So
33%, I think that way.
They're not trying to get along with nobody. Go ahead, brother.
Yeah, 33% of them think that way. The polls show that.
Yeah.
If not 50.
If I can't have it, you can go to court and see that. You can go to the criminal. You can go in the jail and see that.
Let me say something else I said last week, too. Let me just rephrase that. No, I think it's more than 33%. We say their way. What happens is we think when sometimes us as blacks, we think their way means the white racist way. No. Their way means their way. That's why I said last week and I said the other week. The Republican or the liberal, the conservative or the liberal, the one that wants to be against abortion, the one for abortion. Both of them want it their way. Neither one of them give a damn about you. They just want you to go along with their way. The liberals want us to go along with anything goes. The other ones want us to go along with getting the fuck up out of here. Either way, it's still their way.
They use your number, Dawood. I was in the union. I was in 25 years, United Steelworkers. They didn't want you. You know what? Unions were created to keep blacks out of the workforce.
Out of it, yes.
But when they wanted to gather some strength, Dawood, against the corporations, they started allowing black people and people of color into the union. But then my union helped get me fired in 2002. But they still maintain control over you with the cooperation of the corporate structure of U.S. Steel to dominate you. It's all about control. That's what I learned from this book, Behold a Pale Horse. It's all about maintaining that control.
So real quick, back to FEMA. I'm gonna read real quick back to FEMA the orders that he called out. So we talk about FEMA. We talk about, you made it clear, the Federal Emergency Management Agency. That means any emergency. That don't mean just storm and weather. We've always equated it to storm is the emergency. That means emergency civil war, emergency homeland security emergency.
Exactly.
I mean, everything they consider a national emergency that may uproot the government, here's what the executive order does. Order, executive order 10-90-95 provides for the takeover of the communications media. Order 10-90-97 provides for the takeover of all electric power, petroleum, gas, fuels, and minerals. Executive order 10-988 provides for the takeover of food resources and farms. And the farm, not just the food. They want the food and the farm. Executive order 10-99-9 provides for the takeover of all modes of transportation, control of highways, seaports, etc. Executive order 11-11-0000 provides for the mobilization of all citizens into work brigades. Provide for the mobilization of all citizens into work brigades under government supervision. This is an executive order that FEMA can issue. Executive order 11-002 designates the Postmaster General to operate national registration of all purple. We want to know where you're at and what you're doing. Executive order 11-003 provides for the government to take over airports and all aircraft. You ain't going nowhere. Executive order 11-004 provides for housing and finance authority to provides for the housing and finance authority to relocate communities designated earlier to be abandoned and establish new locations for population. It can move you where you want to. Rise up if you want to. Executive order 11-005 provides for the government to take all railroads, island waterways, and public storage facilities. Brother, those are executive orders that they can issue once this thing starts. And we sitting here ain't got a pot to piss in or a window to throw it out of. If they don't get with me on these plans on just discussing it with me, how I can just put them on a plane to get them over to the other side of the world and see the opportunity that awaits for us at home. If we just unite with our people over there, get the hell she going. But when this thing, and we watch it every day on Fox News, CNN, I would love to see Fox News and CNN have a fucking a cage match. They get each other. Put them in a cage match.
Now you read all them executive orders.
Yes, sir.
And under that. Now, all of these were combined under Nixon into one huge executive order, which allowed all of this to take place if the president declares a national emergency, can be implemented by the head of FEMA, not by the president. The president has already given the head
FEMA
of FEMA the power.
When he calls FEMA and sends them in, he gave him that power.
All of these were combined into Executive Order 11-490, and that was signed by President Carter on July 20, 1979, and is, in fact, law. So, with you saying what you're saying, Dawood, about moving out,
interesting
the plan
book.
Is already in effect. The plan is already in effect. The sheep are blind. The sheep are twerking and worried about $1,000 gym shoes. And who's going to hit the most points?
Say it.
And who's going to worship Jesus more? And what we going to call Jesus and all that? Even Farrakhan said that. Can we set aside all this religion and try to work together in a common effort to uplift and free our people? What William Cooper is trying to tell you, you ain't free, you ain't never being free, and you ain't going to be free unless you read what I'm telling you and learn to open your mind to a new way of thinking.
And then he's telling you, even when you read it, I'm giving it to you, but understand, if we take over, we still going to control you too. I guess I get from it why we were given the book. We were given the book because he wanted us to He wanted to know how they think and how they go at each other. And I keep telling people, I said, look, let them, this thing, let it play out, man. Let it play out.
Here's the thing, though, Dawu. This is the thing I learned studying with the Hebrew nations. I never studied with the Nation of Islam, but I had some real good friends that came out of jail and were in the NOI. And they opened my eyes to a lot of stuff. The stuff that they learned in jail, the writings. That's when I began reading Elijah Muhammad, How to Eat. And all of that. So I claim that to have an open mind about a lot of things, Dawu. So I look at things like you said, me, you, and this other brother, Kahan, we all have our perspective and our experiences, and that can cause a balance if we respect each other's path to learning. You know, your path with military. Jehovah Witness, military, Nation of Islam, school, education, whatever. Kahan's path, he was military also. My path was industrial, in the steel mill. That's where I turned, came into my young manhood at, you know. So, and watching the dominant society in that mill, which was white managers, do their thing and control us through the job market or through how much overtime they could give you, or through how easy a job they could give you, and those were usually reserved for people that look like them, their family. And that's what he said. He's going to protect his family. But one point I want to make, that control, I do believe that this society that we live in here right now, present day America, is going to fall, is going to fail. I mean, because it's just too much going on. They're doing too much. You got the Republican. But like you said, one thing, though, they always unite against each other. And they weren't going to kill them senators and everything. I believe all that is theater for us sheep.
I don't think at the end of the day they're going to do that. But, however, I thank you. I think you and
they will do it now. They're capable.
Here's where it comes funny, man. Three words, what he said. He said, for those with the resources to do otherwise, we're told to be irresponsible. So I can take
there
the same thing he said and reverse it on us. For us that know that the possibility exists of civil war, for those that know that this man, really the majority of them, only want us focused on their way, and their way only, be it we conservative, be it liberal. For us to know that, for us not to even in talk to people or invest with people who think they know a way out of here, we're being irresponsible. Preachers are being irresponsible to our people. Politicians are being irresponsible because they want us to go with the kumbaya bullshit that America is going to be this melting pot. And that's the, well, if that happens, cool. I'm all right. If America becomes a melting pot, I'm going to be good. But if she doesn't...
Listen to this, brother. And from my exposure to the Bible, Moses left. He didn't try. He came back. He tried. And never though, when he got them in the wilderness, they wanted to turn around and go back. I have a son that totally believes in the American dream. He totally believes it's all going to be all right.
I know.
He's going to get his VA benefit from now until forever. He got his rifle and everything like that, but he already knows. I discussed this with him when we were speaking. Oh, hey, we ain't got the firepower, Pop, to go up against them. Yeah, one of us might have. A couple of us got an AR-15. And got some 9mm, but if they want to tow, then they can. Matter of fact, Dawood, all they got to do is starve us out. We ain't got no control over our food production.
No.
The Nation of Islam, the NOI was the only one trying to grow food and import fish and try to feed their own people at one time. The Hebrews also do that. They got slaughterhouses and they grow crops. But the majority of us have lost our land. We're not farming. They don't help the black farmers. Biden promised that Trump and Biden, they ain't gave them people the funds that the black farmers are supposed to get. So we can get starved out in 2 weeks. We can
just to pat myself on the back, I had me a nice old cucumber salad last night.
All right, right. I've eaten your cucumbers. Your cucumbers are really good. I picked up a couple of them when I got off the bus.
I noticed I had some missing.
Yeah, you laid them out there, and I came in from, I think it was Larry's funeral. I jumped off the bus, and I said, let me walk down here and see the Dogwood. And I saw the nice little fat cucumber. he ain't going to miss him.
I ain't been able to do much with the okra because I ain't got no kitchen, so I just gave the okra away. I've been giving okra away. But, I'm going to have
hey,
a garden wherever I'm at.
I tell you what, brother, let me get some of them.
Go pick them anytime you see them on the thing, just pick them.
Okay, go get you, I bought 2 pounds at the farmer's market last week. I bought half of them, you can put them in the slow cooker.
One okra, for some reason, my okra, I can eat fried okra. I have not been able to get somebody to cook okra right for me. I guess when I first had it was slimy, and I don't like slimy okra. I like crunchy okra.
Turned
my taste off to that.
Well, I don't know if you like pickle, but I like pickled okra. I go Mr. George and get his pickle juice after he's finished selling his pickles. There's my lot of pickles for $1.
What you do? How you make them?
You just throw it in there and wait.
You cut them up?
Nope. I just use the whole, I wash them. Just throw them in the pickle juice and wait for about 4 or 5 days. You got to do some crunchy pickle.
Like I do with the vinegar with the cucumbers.
Yeah, right.
Okay,
that's what you do with the okra.
You can put them in together.
I put mine in with jalapeno peppers. And so they spicy and crunchy.
Ah, cool. You done taught me something now. Okay.
So,
I didn't know that.
So just go get
I've been trying to live with bad necessities. So I keep my crock pots and I keep a little hot plate. That's all I got cooking, but I'm learning how to eat. What it's doing is causing me to eat more raw food and causing me to eat like I'm going to eat when I go overseas.
Exactly. There's a brother, Dawood, that's 77 years old, that ain't drank no water. He's a doctor, and he lives in Jamaica, and he climbs a tree and get his coconut at 77 years old. He don't eat nothing cooked. Everything is raw. He said it's already been cooked by the sun. He just knows how to mix it up and make it taste good. But he's no animal products at all, and he's not drinking any water in 40-some years. And he come out of his house in the morning, Dawood, and climb the coconut tree and go up there and get a few or three coconuts. Throw them down, coconut water. I drank some last night. Walmart's got 16-ounce can right here, 16.9-ounce can for $1. That's the cheapest coconut water out there. They probably ain't going to sell it no more. Not Walmart, Family Dollar. That's where I got it.
Catch them. You got to catch them on, I'm giving you my secret. I'll share it with you. You got to catch them on truck day. You know that manager up there? She a cool manager. When you talk to her, just tell her, like, say, hey, look, I want an extra case. She'll order a case for you because she do it for me.
We're Family Dollar?
Yeah, she cool. The manager up there pretty cool. She's a pretty cool manager. And on those health stuff, like this, a lot of times she run out on spices. So what I've been doing with her is I say, hey, can you get me an extra case? Well, I'm going to buy it soon. She don't do it for everybody. You just got to get in friendly with her because she can't take orders like that all day long. But I'm going to tell you the way to get in friendly with her. I always compliment her on the store. And I made a good friend with her because nobody would compliment on what they're doing. They did a good job turning that store around.
She's been able to organize and get people to stay and work, you know.
Yes, sir.
I made her my
number one friend. Yes, sir.
Okay. I got you. I hear you. As a matter of fact, I'm going to ask her today, can I get a couple of days work there? You know, so just right, you know, I walk in distance, air conditioned, inside. I can stock a little bit.
That'd be good for you, bro.
You know,
she'll do she. talk to her. She good people. Before COVID, I was going to do the same thing afterward because I like the way she organized the show. I said, oh, she got this place. I don't mind coming here and give her. I was really going to work just to help her out because the way it's one of my community stores, and I was so glad she came in and turned the mug around because they were about to shut it down.
Yeah, because the brother was trying to get it together there, but I don't know what went with him. It must have been his personality might have been kind of off.
No, he was doing it. So when you in those kind of jobs, I done retail before. I used to be in retail, and when you in those kind of jobs, you have to be committed. You got to understand, and I'm nothing against the brother. When he was up there, he was always outside on the phone because look on the side of his car. He was just up there. He had to make some extra money. He had another business in them cakes that he was trying
to
do.
Yeah, he had the cheesecake thing going.
Yeah,
so
that was his business.
Thing.
He was never focused on the store. He was always focused on making his money so he could keep his business going. So he never gave a damn about the store. So you saw it go down. He couldn't keep the team together. When you got a store like that, you got to keep a team together. And since we're talking about getting out of here, that's what I realized about getting out of here.
She got the teamwork going. Now that you say that, Dawoo, let's take that back to our struggle that we were talking about.
That's why I'm going to go ahead. Go ahead. That's where I'm going.
Your heart.
Go ahead. That's where I'm going. Go ahead.
We have not learned to work as a team, our people. We are a bunch of individuals. And we've been diverted by materialism. Everything that the dominant power structure, or we call them the oppressor, or we call them white people, everything that he has done, Dawoo, has been to maintain his control. That's what Cooper was saying in that paragraph you read. It would be irresponsible not to. So we are the most irresponsible people in the world. Garvey was trying to get us in World War what was that, in 1910, 12, when we started leaving the South? He was trying to get us, because they talk about how the Jews, the Italians, everybody saved their money. The black guy came from the South making a dollar a day, or 50 cents a day, to making $12 to $24 a week in New York. And instead of saving his money and trying to create something, he was out buying silk socks and suits. And at the bar. So we got to have strategies. We have not developed a community strategy, man. It's all individuals trying to outdo each other. The Mexicans talk about us real bad on video. You can put 20 of them in a house, Dawoo, in a one-room apartment, and they'll be there to everybody walk out with something. You put two of us in a two-bedroom apartment, the fight's going to start. And both of us will be on the street. So we gotta have a way of thinking, and you call it teamwork. That's teamwork. When you worry more about the team and the community than you are about your own individual self. That's why a lot of those people that stormed the Capitol are in jail now. They believed in what they were doing, Dawoo. They were doing this for Trump, for the team. And now they are there. This guy get 22 years. You know, Trump ain't going to get nothing. But they believed and he could unify them into a force to go in there and do that, just like that manager at Family Dollar.
Yeah.
They thought they were doing it for God and country. They were really doing it for him, but they believe in God and country. That's what William Cooper said. I believe in my family. I believe in God.
It proved them correct because it hasn't, even with the 22, you would think, well, if I was involved with something like that, I'm running away with it. No. Even without them giving, because I always said when it first happened, I said, well, you know, me being one of them people, I was like, well, they ain't going to get no money. They ain't going to get no time. No, they gave out some heavy sentences. But even with the sentences, it didn't stop their movement. It's like they're still going forward. It just pumped more motivation in.
But that's how leadership can take you, Dawoo, and program. I don't know a program, but like I say, you raise your child to be God-fearing, to love thy neighbor and everything. And then at 18 and 19, you allow the government to put a gun in his hand and send him to the Korea or somewhere to fight. For what? Fight for the interests of the government. to control and dominate the oil in Iran and Afghanistan. There were no weapons of mass destruction over there. But hey, when they, and I believe it was coordinated, that was a conspiracy theory, that was all coordinated by our government. Even Jesse Ventura said that. Those planes dropped in New York and on the Pentagon. That was all a plan. Yeah, here I go, Dawood. I don't know how long I've lived after saying this, but I'm 68 now. I really ain't concerned about living too much longer where I have to be dependent on somebody. But I'm going to say this. It's all theater, Dawood, to me. It's all theater. I just sit here and watch it. The Republican Party. Now, here we got Jim Jordan. Ain't got no law degree or nothing. Some wrestling coach that allowed his boys to be molested when he was the coach at Ohio University or whatever. They have no morals. There's no Trump done told 45,000 lies while he was in office, and he's a moral authority. He's turning around calling Biden a crook, and his son-in-law walked out of the White House and get $2 billion from the Saudis. His son-in-law was in the White House with no kind of experience at all. And he put his son-in-law and daughter in the White House. He's as corrupt as hell, too. But that's why they love him, because he wakes up every morning. I wish I could imitate that with that white man. He wakes up every morning. He sits up all night tweeting, and he wakes up every morning and put on a nice white shirt and a suit and a long red tie and go at it again. He's still threatening these government.
When you talk about the theater, and when you was talking about the theater with the planes, I go back to 9-1-1. When you talk about the theater, most people forget where America was at 9 months prior to the planes hitting the building. They just throw it out. When you saw people start saying, well, that was planned, people throw that out the window. But they don't forget 9 months prior to that, we had an inauguration. And it was one of the worst inaugurations. It was worse than Trump's inauguration. It was one of the worst inaugurations because the country was dead split down the middle because we had waited almost 3 months to get the results of the election because of the chip ballot.
Exactly. You're right, Dawood. You're right. And,
so
but
country
look.
The country was at a Civil War point at their point. If it wasn't for Gore conceding, you had a possible Civil War on your hands.
And that's the point I wanted to make, Dawood. That's the point that you went right there. Gore, that's teamwork.
Teamwork.
We'll get the Democratic Party. We'll get control later. That's teamwork.
Yes.
He gave up for the peace of the country to keep it together. Because you're right. They were at the precipice of civil war.
That was the most divided I've ever seen America in my life, other than now. They were at the same point they were at now. Over some chip ballots, the America was split 50-50 because the vote itself was only about like a less than a million votes. The race was that close.
Yeah,
it was that close. It was
the ballots
one of the closest races ever.
They supposed to dump the ballots in the ocean in Florida
somewhere. Yeah.
But Dawood, you're right. So he had to bring the country together. That's control of the seat. Boom, dropped 2 or 3 buildings. You know, now we got people 25 years later dying from cancer from inhaling all that smoke and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But that didn't matter. Now, what mattered was to maintain control. To maintain control, you unify the people. You unify people, usually white-skinned people, are unified behind war because that's something they love to do.
And the beauty of it for them that's in the control game, then – they use that to go start a war.
Exactly.
They use that.
Exactly.
They use the trade center to go to war.
Well, that's what he said. Cooper said in the book. That's how you thin the population out.
Manipulating control. When they found out years later, there was no weapons of mass destruction over there.
Right. But you know what, Dawood? What's the magic word for joining people up and make them go to war? Patriotism. Patriotism, God and country, the flag. They said, whoever said that, I forgot what they said. They said when, I forgot who said it, Dawood, they said when when America falls, when whatever comes to America, it's going to be wrapped in the flag with a Bible, you know, thinking that religion, that's us. That's the only thing, and we're not unified on that, though, with our people, our community, the black community. We're not unified on how to worship God. But the person that put the idea of God in our head, and white Jesus Christ, and Catholicism and all of that, they don't believe in none of that. The Pope's residence out there in Rome, what is it called, Nauru? Anyway, that's the seat of power. That's the seat of power. Because Will McCall, the Vatican, Will McCall, Bill Cooper, he mentioned, he did almost a whole chapter on Catholicism and everything. And those first three chapters, he went through all the seats of power that exists in the world, from the Rothschilds, who control whole economies, to the Vatican, and how they traded power back and forth. And that's the same thing with the Republican Party and the Democratic Party. They're just trading power. Ain't nothing going to change for us.
Who got next?
Yeah, that's all. That's all it is. Just like on the basketball court. Who up next?
Yep.
They only got two players. Two teams.
Who got next?
So now,
you on the bench.
Now let's
you
get there.
To get in
let's
the
go there for. Let's go there for a minute, Dawu. So look who's challenging. Two things. One other point I want to make, brother. They put black faces in high places, and all those faces fall apart. Two examples: Chicago and New York. Black faces who are financing migrants. They send them busloads and plane loads of migrants to these cities, these two cities. You got black people there already suffering. That's our tax money. We're like sheep, and they send them busloads, and this black mayor, who's only been in office a month or two, he's trying to figure out how to take care of these migrants. The mayor in New York City said New York City is being destroyed by migrants. Well, why is all the cities that's doing bad are usually run by black people who are Democrats? I mean, it's a setup. Everything, that's the thing I'm learning, though. It's all a setup. Atlanta was set up. Washington, D.C. Everything they can point their finger at and say is doing bad, or is high crime, or is out of control, those are the places they're probably going to send the military in, or FEMA, to take control. Chicago, New York, those are the places that they're setting, and they're always going to be headed by somebody with a black face. Think about it, Abu.
So what you're saying is what we've said, 9 times out of 10, when you see that black face, you assume that we've got some level of control. No, we don't. We are only given in that position for a purpose to serve them. They already had an agenda when they made sure the numbers were in place to keep us in that role, just like they did with Mr. Obama.
As Omar says, white domination and power would not exist unless they showed us examples of successful black people.
Yeah.
Ofa, LeBron. So as the American dream, just like the American poor white folk can think he's going to get where Trump is, the same thing with black folk. We think we're going to get up there with what Ofa has, or what LeBron has, or what Tyler Perry has. That's the dream of most working class people, that I can make it here in America if I just work hard enough, kiss enough bass, and brown nose enough, and one day I can get there. I watch it in the mirror. That's where I say I learned about life at I learned my life. I got in the mirror at 21 years old, and I saw how the power thing worked, and how who could become the general manager, and who could go to Pittsburgh and run and be over the whole U.S. steel structure. But I saw them come from the shop floor, Dawood. I saw them. I worked beside some of them that made it, you know. But I see the stuff. the brown noses, the sacrifice and all the hours, being called out to the mill in the middle of the night. That's management, and that's how you achieve. You give everything to that company. You give everything. Like you said, you commit it, and that's how you make it in America. And sometimes you don't make it, but you got to make it look like it, even when they snub you or they put you down. You're still going for it. But see, those are the ones that usually turn against that system, Dawood. That's what happened. You know, Bill Cooper, the cook wouldn't cook him no eggs, you know. So he started building resentment.
Yeah.
Okay. he wouldn't give him no over easy eggs.
He wasn't a man.
And he said he didn't eat no breakfast from the time, for the whole time there. He was in that squadron or whatever. So that's what happened. That's where the people start resenting the authority that they wanted to be. I want to be in that position. I'd do anything to be in that position. But then, for some reason, maybe it's your personality, or maybe the person just doesn't like the way you look, or the person that could get, that could help you get in that position. I worked with some of the guys on the shop floor. I was a millwright. I was a grease monkey. I worked with guys that made it. And I sat in there and they helped fire me. I worked with guys. So that was the first. The next thing they asked you, whether you was black or white, was only one or two blacks that were going to get in that position of management. And they asked you, first thing, will you fire your best friend if he messes up? You got to show that commitment. Same thing in any group, Dawood, the mob, the nation. You got to show that commitment. If you're going to move ahead, that's it. That's life. In the church, same thing. You got to show that commitment. You got to be willing to backstab somebody for the ball.
And
you
got to be willing.
Prison games,
yeah.
In the prison games, it's all the same. It's about power. And you're going to maintain that power, you got to be a good soldier. You know? The boss tell you go stab your brother, you go stab your brother. I'm talking about maybe your natural brother. So, hey, it's the same thing. It's a thirst for power. It's power and greed. That's what runs the world. And so this man is losing his grip. He's losing his grip, Dawood. They're not producing more white-skinned children. And they're losing. Look, Africa is saying, fuck you in the rainbow.
Yeah,
take your money, France, America, take your Western ideas back to the West. We're not having it. So they're losing the grip on influence. Well, that's why I feel that it's going to be civil war, maybe a threat of civil war here in America, because, and Cooper is predicting some of this, because
that's what always attracted me to the beginning of the book anyway. When we look at the title itself, Behold a Pale Horse. The pale horse,
that's
if I'm
biblical.
Not mistaken, was the last horse.
That's biblical.
If my history of Revelation serves me correctly, I think I still remember it. The white horse was for conquest. Then there was a red horse, and I think that horse was for war. Then you had the black horse, which was for pestilence. So we've already had those. We've had the conquest. That was white America. That's white horse with the conquest. They conquered the world. Then they started war everywhere. So you got the red horse. We're in the time period now of the pestilence. You have things, according to scripture that I've always studied, you're having that take place. COVID is a pestilence. You know, the non-plague. That's what they call a pestilence. That's when people saw COVID
pestilence.
Hit. We were
pestilence,
the pestilence.
Yeah.
That's the pestilence. So the last horse is the pale horse. The pale horse is death. That's death to the country. That's what they call it. That's why he said, behold the pale horse. When the pale horse comes, the pale horse is issuing a death decree. And then he says in Revelation, when you see these things occur, that's the part that black people forget to read. The preachers forget that part of the book. He said, when you see these things, when you see these four horses, he gives a warning.
Well,
and this
Dawood,
day,
he just said it. You said the preacher,
my people.
You said the preacher forget that part. We ain't forgot. The preacher is paid.
I was giving him a break this morning during church time.
He's supposed to control you. You know?
I was trying to get the breaking point.
That's why King said the most sacred day in America is 11 they o'clock Sunday morning.
Yes.
They don't need you around the white folk to learn right now. You can stay in there and watch that preacher. It's all theater. Watch him scream and shout and holler and run all back and forth. Rubbing Leroy.
While you said that, let me make a disclaimer real quick because I've gotten this about this show. Number one, it wasn't a show on Sundays at 10 o'clock on purpose because I don't go to church. But that's why we did the show. I want to make that disclaimer. The other disclaimer is something you always mention. I want to make a disclaimer because I know I have some friends that watch this show. A lot of people think that's I'm still Nation. I'm still an associate of the Nation, still support the Nation. I'm not what you call an active registered member. And I want people to know that's listening to the show on Facebook, because I don't want people to run back and say, well, the brother from the Nation is doing this show on Proposal. This coming from No Covers, which is a typical universal organization for me. And it also happens to be one of the premier, or will be, inshallah, God willing, will be one of the premier organizations in our motherland that's primary purpose is to find us a way that we can get out of this situation. That's the only thing we're doing. We're always doing this because we're recruiting. We're trying to find people. Like I said, I'm trying to find 50 people that really want to leave the country. I really don't want any more than that because I can't manage any more than that. I really only need 25, but I'll take 50 because I know I have to take 50. Probably 20 of them going to run back home once they get there. So I need enough to build a community there so that my children and our children, those that go, will eventually be there. And it'll always be a place where blacks in America can go. If we did that, we got 54 nations. If we did that in every nation in Africa, had a group of people on the ground developing a place where blacks here can go. And even in South America, do the same thing. Because when it says get out of earth, I literally have lived that most of my life. And I believe that should be our game plan. Get out.
Well, Dawu, let me say this, brother. Wasn't there a movie called Get Out?
Yeah. There was.
Well, here's the point. Here's the point I'm trying to make right there, Dawu. This is what I learned studying with the Hebrew Nation, Black Hebrew, Israelites, whatever they call themselves. I studied a few years with them in Indiana and here in Wilmington. You are called out. You're not recruited out. Some kind of way God bestowed on your mind, like he bestowed on your mind, to leave. You're called out. You ain't recruited out. You ain't convinced, because a lot of people ain't. It comes into your mind, and then you toy with the idea, and then you develop it, and you nurture it, and water it, and then it starts to make sense to you, and then a lot of things come to you. It's like a revelation. You just called it revelation. Revelation. I need to get out of here to survive and have peace of mind, because there's nothing more precious than peace of mind and happiness. You know, I need to leave here. I don't want to be a target all the time. I don't want to look over my shoulder all the time because of my skin color. I can go where my skin color doesn't match, doesn't matter. Right now, it's just like it's the conditions is just like the Civil War, Dawu. We are helpless, hopeless people, totally dependent on the power structure, and the power structure is fighting for the power. What they going to do with us? That was the question in the Civil War. Are we going to let him go free? Are we going to keep him down here and keep him a slave?
They're trying to fight.
They're going to fight over the labor force. That's what they were doing during the Civil War. What are we going to do with them? And they had brothers against brothers. White families broke up. And it was all about who was going to maintain control of the black slave body. And that's what it's still about today, though. Because who? What about basketball players and football players? Highly paid slaves. You know, that's all. And our politicians. They all They can't. Omar says it. Oprah and LeBron and Tyler Perry ain't gonna rise up against the power structure.
Well,
that's where they get their money from. That's where they make their living from. They ain't gonna rise up against them. The help of their own community. So it's time to go. The African countries are showing you. We not take your dollar and go home. We not allowing those Western ways. You treated us like animals. Now you coming over here trying to convince us to act like animals. We not doing it.
Hey, Glenn, I can share this with you, and you of all people would understand this. I'm going to tell you why. When you said revelation, I know it was a revelation, and most people don't know where it came from. So you would remember when we first started No Covers. When I first started No Covers, I would go to the office early in the morning at the Blue Ribbon Commission, and I would do the show online there. I remember one of the earlier shows, you read Frederick Douglass. You read the speech of Frederick Douglass on Wonderful Weekend. We still have that. If people will go into the No Covers library, they'll see we 4th of July. That's still in our library right now on this line. You can go into the library and pull that up and play it to this day because I keep the library online of where No Covers started. What had happened was most people don't know. At that particular time, before I had joined the BRC, I had one of the biggest mental health companies in this country. I was a black male that was able to stay in the Nation of Islam, right? And was able to flex my muscle as the nation and be able to run the nation, but I had a mental health company. And that company was able to survive, but they made it so I would have to contend. They kept telling me along the way it was signs. Either you're going to choose this lifestyle or you're going to choose that lifestyle. You're not going to be living over here in Echo Farm preaching that pro-black shit. So then they got me with that with the nation. I had that situation happen. So then what I did, people don't realize, I remember I had dreadlocks after I left the nation. I cut my hair and went and got the job with the BRC because a lot of people felt when I lost my mental health company, there were a lot of blacks that knew I had been targeted. They have been targeted because, number one, you ain't going to keep talking that pro-black shit and make that kind of money. So those that knew that came to my rescue, and they gave me a job at the BRC. And all of them privately told me, Daoud, this is your second chance. You got another job. Now keep that black shit over there in the damn corner somewhere and go ahead and make your paper. But once again, I'm opening my mouth. I started doing No Covers. I started working with a brother that tried to do the bar downtown. We were trying to do black economics because I was using the opportunity to do black economics, to do the talk show, et cetera. They was like, nah, that ain't what we paid you for. We paid you because you had a good, strong voice within the community, but we really want you to be our Uncle Tom nigga. And I was like, nah, I can't do that. And the moment I bucked, that's when they came up with me being dumb enough to let them catch me with my pants down. And I never forget how it happened. Me and the brother at the club had got into an argument, a fight over some money. They let that cause us to be of a beef. And I went home so mad that day. I had never drunk that kind of Ciroc before in my life, and I had drunk a whole bottle of Ciroc. Got a phone call that night that a sister happened to be here that I had booked, and she wanted me to come back down there. I told her I had been drinking. I didn't need to come back down. She begged and begged and begged. So me and my wife at the time got in the car and rode back down there. Make a long story short, when we get down there, have a couple more drinks, I'm letting my hair down because I'm pissed. So I'm already upset. I'm not thinking right. That's not an excuse. But anyway, we let our hair down that night, and I realized she can't drive a stick shift. So instead of taking a cab home, my dumb ass get in the car. Boom. When I got to the bridge and they had the roadblock, the man called me by name. He had already knew who I was, Mr. Elamine.
Yep.
He said, Mr. mean, yep. If you can get, so he goes, brother, it was a brother. The brother said, Mr. Ellamy, I just got a job to do. But if you can, we're going to take you up here and hold you. If you can get sober or get under the radar between now and the time you get to the police station, and we're going to take a very long time getting there, do whatever you can because we know who you are and what you do, and we don't want to see you lose like this because they got you again. That's when I decided at that point, I had decided when I get out of this situation, when I get out of these damn, wearing these shoes down, where I got shoes with holes in them because I'm walking around here with this damn, you remember that shit? I said, when I get out of this,
I am finding a way to get out
of this system because I can see if you in this system, you can't talk like Cooper. You're going to get killed like his ass got killed.
There you go. It's just the reality of the devil. You can't go up, you know. Malcolm couldn't go up against the nation and the government. Umar, if you fight the power that be, whatever government it is, you gonna, you know.
Yes,
we marking ourselves right now. Just by
We marking, but you know why? Here's the difference. The difference is they don't mind what we doing. They want us to fuck up out of anyway.
Well, it's a lot of things, Dr. Wadabu.
They are doing something. They hurrying up getting me out of here. They know we on the ass. They trying to get me out of here damn quick.
It's according to where you taking the crowd, Dabu. Now, yeah. And the reason I say we might be marking, because you might be taking some of their laborers and some of their away. You saying, let's go. Well, sometimes, in a lot of instances, speaking on the Civil War, in a lot of instances, like you said, there is two sides here. There are some that want to keep us here so they can shoot us down and have somebody to fuck over. And there are some who say they don't want to see another nigga in 100 years. So that's the two sides. So that power to be, some of them were probably saying, yeah, take as many as you can and get them on up out of here.
Yeah.
And some of them with that sadistic nature say, nah, I need them to stay here. I need my football player, my basketball player, my entertainer.
I'm banking on that. Come on. I'm banking on that horse. I'm shooting dice. I'm saying, Trump, go ahead, do your thing. Go ahead, do your thing. Because I know as soon as you get in, you're going to make the exit door a whole lot easier for me to get the hell on out of here. Because you all ass don't want to see anyway.
Oh, yeah.
I'm rolling dice on that crew. Yeah.
Hey, Dawood, Trump would say, yeah, take your ass on to that shithole nation.
I'm rolling dice. That homeboy keep his horse running so that them folks will keep opening the doors and say, hey, man, get them out of here. We don't want shit away. And take about 40 of them niggas.
Right. Right. Don't come over here and teach us how to run our damn country. Go back to your shithole ass nation. That's what
that's it. Hey, man, it's been lovely. We got about 90 seconds left on the show. I tell you what we're going to do, because I skipped a couple parts. I want to come back next week with Kahan, and I really want to go into this thing that he talks about, systems of control, short list of outputs and the long list of outputs. When he starts talking about what they use in the media, TV, I want to go into that, some of that next week, so we can start pointing out to our people exactly how they control them every day, especially when it comes to our television watching and our food consumption, That's one of the biggest ways they control us, straight death, and we don't even see that at all. So I want to touch base with that this week, but pretty good show this week. Hey, for y'all that's missing Kahan, I want to know, what did y'all call it, Glenn? He said he had the gates, a holy gate, a gates or something. They had a special thing in Hebrew this week. I forgot what he called it, but that's why he's not here today. He had to go to that today, and he said the lights was last night instead of the night. I forgot what he called him. I'm missing up, but whatever he called it, that's where he at. But he'll be back here with us next week on next week's show.
All right, my brother. Well, hey, listen. Have you been getting out any? You stepping outside of the door or what?
Yeah, I get a little sunlight. That's about it.
Well,
you know
I might come
I'm
by and get me a cucumber,
I'm getting, I'm getting better. What I'm doing right now, I know after 2 hours, I'm supposed to go to a meeting today. So I don't think I'm going to make it because I know right now, I get about 2 hours, I'm going to be wild. So once I get off the show, I'm probably going to be it for the day. I'm going to get me a nap, and I'll probably wake up probably about 5 or 6 and get back at it again. My body is just fatigued. I don't have no energy, but like I said, what I'm doing is already applying and looking at long-term situations. I got an appointment next week with my mental health physician. I got an appointment next week with my sarcoidosis physician. And then I got a follow-up with my primary care in about 2 weeks. And I'm going through all the tests so that if this is long-term, then I can go ahead and get the resources because there are these resources out there that they need to, since y'all created this damn COVID shit, you need to go ahead and fix my damn ass back up. And y'all got the resources to do that. I think that's one time we realize a lot of time, you know, y'all playing this experimental game. You know, I had to, and I tell people I am vaxxed. I didn't want to vax. I had a choice, but at that particular time, what was going on in Africa was so important to me, I had to get over there. That would have put me 2 years behind if I played the non-vax game. So I basically was already, when COVID hit, I was already due to go to Africa. And so I had money on the table. If I had not vaxxed, I probably would have lost $6,000 because that money was already spent to go. It wasn't going to be recoverable. I had to get over there to get everything I'm doing over there now in place. And so I said, get it, pig me. Go ahead and give me the vax and let's go. Now I'm realizing probably shouldn't because the COVID gets worse off they finding out in people that get it that's been vaxxed because now you got a double whammy. You're getting the COVID and you already had the COVID from the get-go when you got the vax. So you're getting a double whammy. Your situation can even be worse. So since that is the case, then you all knew that when you vax people, there's a line of people right now that's saying, hey, look, now you got to compensate or you got to figure out some kind of way to make sure our life is intact because we did what you ordered us basically to do because you said if we didn't, couldn't go back to work. If I didn't, I couldn't fly.
But Dawoo, they made it a law, they put it in the word that you had no recourse. You can't sue nobody. Now,
well,
you
not really suing. It's not a suit. It's not really suing.
Right.
It's basically now what they're saying is they know they did that. So what the government has already started to do because they don't want an uprising, they have already started creating. This is the first time I've ever seen a diagnosis hit the code that quick. They actually have a diagnosis called long-term COVID. It takes years for you to get a diagnosis for, even with me now. If I was to go out with sarcoid, I would have to have chronic sarcoid to go out. You have to have congestive heart failure, not just heart failure. You have to have congestive heart failure to get disability. They have a disability already on the books called long-term COVID. And
okay.
When I realized that, I was like, they already preparing for this shit.
So
they
never covered
put
their
something
ass.
On the disability scale that quick.
They weren't going to let you get no $5, $10 million lawsuit. But you can get government disability, Social Security disability.
Exactly.
Okay.
That's why they did it, right?
That sounds about fair.
Yeah. When I realized they already know there's going to be long-term effects because why would they put it within a year? They already have a diagnosis and people are applying for diagnosis to get their Social Security and disability early because it's going to be long-term. They didn't want the lawsuit.
Well,
they like, fuck you.
Right.
We're going to avoid the lawsuits by giving them this shit right here.
Well, either way, you get taken care of for the rest of your life, whether it's a lawsuit or you get a check
every month.
If they got that disability on the book, I'm sure you could qualify for it, you know, if your body is being debilitated.
And even if I don't, at least I get the resources and the services. I got two nurses that call me every day that's on my team.
Right. Well, they know they don't put it on the book. They would have done the research, so they're gonna have because some people, and I've read Dawoo, some people don't recover from the effect. Like
That's why I'm telling people take the precaution now. If you anybody who has it, I've got two people I've called, three people I called since I've had it that didn't even know about that. I've got two or three people I called. They're like, man. 6 months later, I said, are you still tired? You still? I said, you need to go back to the doctor and get diagnosed for long-term COVID just in case. You might say you feel good going to work, but what happens 3 years from now? You need to have your
Maria
registry now on the book.
Right, right. Maria had it October before last, still coughing. She still don't have a full sense of smell. It'll go away, and then it'll come back. She coughed me yesterday. I said, why am I in the shop, in this goddamn small-ass shop with this woman? Because she coughing. She can't explain it. She still ain't got a sense of smell.
I guarantee you, she don't know what I just told you.
Well, she don't care. She white. They ain't gonna quit
exactly.
No way. She got
exactly.
a business. She got a business. She got a business where she making $5,000 to $10,000 a month.
Exactly.
She ain't gonna quit no goddamn way. Plus, her mindset is, and listen, dog. Plus, her mindset is, damn, which a black woman said to me one time, there's more goddamn black men in North Carolina on disability when I told her I was on a dating site. So they mind. That is a failure. That is weakness to them to take a disability.
Exactly.
And so
exactly.
Her mindset ain't even there. She would die in that shop before she got there.
We need to make sure our people know.
Right.
Yeah.
That's all.
All right, black man. I got to get out of here. I hit you up later on.
Okay, now. I'll
end this show. Okay, peace.